Well, good afternoon. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I know, I want to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, you're out there across America. We welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls because we have with us on the line today a special friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who I believe is the finest researcher as far as the issues that we talk about here in the country. And in fact, he has written the major part of my latest newsletter. And if you'd like a copy of that newsletter, that's the April newsletter, which deals with the Clintonian Illuminati. Isn't that an intriguing term? Well, I don't think it has anything to do with Bill Clinton, but it really existed in this country. In fact, together, Dr. Cuddy and I were able to get this out of the Library of Congress. They only had one copy, and then they had some microfilms of it. And I'll tell you, it was a real job to get it. Somebody there certainly wasn't very anxious to have this information out, but we have it, and Dr. Cuddy has quoted from that. So, but right now, let's introduce you to Dr. Dennis Cuddy. How are you today?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. In fact, I did a two-hour program with Marlon Maddox earlier today, and they started the program with an interview with Dennis Cuddy, talking about the Rhodes influence and certainly the influence of Rhodes scholarships on the world today. So let's get a little bit into the background of that, because, first of all, for our listeners, Dr. Cuddy has written two books, which we carry. The Secret Records Revealed, which goes extensively into the Rhodes scholarships, and, of course, the forces that work behind the scenes. And then the second book, Now is the Dawning of the New Age, New World Order. Both are excellent books. We recommend them to you. The first book is a series of basically quotations in chronological order from President Wilson, who talked about the force that ruled the world, to President Roosevelt in 1933, of writing to Colonel Howe saying, as you and I both know, Colonel, there is our government has been owned by financial interests since at least the time of Andrew Jackson, and I'm not excluding the time of W.W., referring to Woodrow Wilson. Of course, President Roosevelt didn't realize he was writing to Colonel Howe, who was the man who had really controlled Woodrow Wilson and manipulated him, just as he was manipulating Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Well, why don't you perhaps tell us a little bit about the Rhodes Scholarships and how they fit into what's going on in the world today?
Well, Rhodes, Cecil Rhodes, was a gold and diamond magnate. He had a vision for the future of the world. His sort of mentor had been a John Ruskin, who various people have indicated was a student of the Illuminati. Many years before, and basically Rhodes' idea was to absorb the wealth of the world and to take the government of the whole world in a rather subtle fashion. He formed a secret society, the Society of the Elect, with a circle of initiates around him, seven or eight people. They were secret, and then around them was a semi-secret association of helpers. And they, in turn, would form these what were called round table groups around primarily in the English-speaking countries of the world, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, England. But also they would eventually be in Germany, places like that. So you also have German Rhodes Scholars. And in addition to these round table groups, you would have scholarships to individuals to come to Oxford, England, where they would be trained and coached and educated in basically the theory that Rhodes was following, which was sort of a one-world globalist philosophy. Although he was a man of great wealth, both his individuals and the people they networked with, others such as the Fabian Socialists, had a basically socialist idea that you would synthesize Eastern communism and Western capitalism into a world socialist government.
Sort of a fascist system?
Yes, sort of an up-to-date feudalistic fascist techno-feudal is what I call it. You have the we're the serfs and the peasants and the oafs and the knaves, and then you have this sort of technical elite at the top in a feudalist fashion, where corporate heads would be like the dukes and the earls and so forth, and would have tremendous power, so that oftentimes you would have heads of states, the monarchs in the old days, really rather impotent, because the corporations and the vast amount of monies that could be taken in and out of countries at the click of a mouse, as they say, would have a tremendous effect. You would have like a George Soros, in effect, wiping out the Malaysian economy practically overnight, and you would have a great deal of coercive pressure on these individuals to do what you want to. And then part of Rhodes' scheme, one of his Association of Helpers members, Canadian Rhodes Scholar Percy Corbett, said around 1940-ish, he was one of the people who devised the plan where to get to a world government, you'd have to have a world economy, and to get to a world economy, you'd have to have these regional economic arrangements like NAFTA and APEC over in Asia and the European Community, and then you would link them all together. It'd be easier to do that. And, of course, this undermines national sovereignty. And that's not just a, quote, right-wing conservative view. If you look at the April 30th issue on the stands today of The Nation, there's a piece by William Grider, who's certainly no conservative, and he basically is arguing and quoting knowledgeable people that that is, in effect, what Chapter 11 of NAFTA does. It just forsakes sovereignty. It undermines the Constitution. You turn over to these elected bureaucrats decisions which force governments literally to change their laws to go along with what the World Trade Organization, NAFTA, want.
And, of course, this last week we saw the demonstrations up in Canada, but nobody ever asked who put up the money for the demonstrators. Why, the same people who are running the thing. You want a controlled opposition. And most of these demonstrators were financed by the very people that they were demonstrating against. They didn't know that. Of course, these were environmentalists, but the environmental movement is primarily funded by the great corporations, the tax-exempt foundations, and people of great wealth, part of this whole incredible move to bring about a one-world order and a new world religion. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here, and when we get back, of course, we'll welcome your calls. If you'd like to talk to Dennis, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But let me tell you his two books, Secret Records Revealed, the quotations that will convince anybody with an open mind that there really is an organized effort out there. Somebody is working behind the scenes to control the world. And then, of course, his second book, Now is the Dawning of the New Age, New World Order. We also carry his book on the National Educational Association and his book on the Fabian Socialist Movement. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and you'll learn more there than you will in 2 or 3 years of university as far as political science is concerned and how the world really works. And then, of course, going right along with that, of course, we could mention some of our four tape sets that go into the people who rule the world, the secret government, secret societies. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret societies. There always have been. There always will be. But, of course, you are not to know that. And so anybody who talks about them today will be ridiculed by the establishment conservative talk show hosts or by the liberal talk show hosts. You're not supposed to ever mention there have been secret societies, and yet history is simply made up of secret societies. In fact, one of the finest books on that is written by the Librarian of Congress, a book which we carry by James H. Billington called Fire in the Minds of Men, and how they use secret societies in the 18th and 19th centuries, and how, of course, the French Revolution culminated in the Russian Revolution. The French Revolution of 1789 was the beginning of a continuous revolution that ended up with the establishment of communism, which, of course, has been financed by the wealth, by the West since inception. So right now, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and be sure to get Secret Records Revealed and Now is the Dawning of the New Age, New World Order. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I'd like to ask Dr. Cuddy a little bit about the Illuminati. You know, my grandfather told my father about the Illuminati just about the beginning of the last century, It wasn't until 1966 or 67 my father told me what his father before him had told him about this secret society that was intent upon taking over the world. And, of course, at the beginning of the 1900s, everybody knew about the Illuminati. But systematically, mention of it was removed from books. Anybody who mentioned it was ridiculed. And that simply didn't happen by accident. So, Dr. Kennedy, can you tell us about the Illuminati, its formation, and then, of course, how it played a part here in the United States?
Sure. Let me start by picking up on what you said just before the break, because it connects. You had indicated the French Revolution played out through the period of the 1800s and then up into the Russian Revolution. And I think if you look at it, what may be happening in America today is a battle between the ideals of the French Revolution and the American Revolution. They sound very similar. The French would say liberté, égalité, fraternité. But by liberty, they didn't mean our concept of freedom. They meant a sense of license, do your own thing. And that's what we pretty much have been taught in schools today. And by égalité, they didn't mean equal opportunity like we think of it. They meant a leveling of the masses under these philosopher kings is what they called them, sort of the elite that we would consider them today. And by fraternité, they meant really a sort of humanistic brotherhood. And that's what we primarily have today. Humanism is taught in the school. We have the Humanist Manifesto 1 and 2 and then Humanist Manifesto 2000. And so there really is a struggle going on between these two ideals. Now, the Illuminati in 1776 infiltrated various organizations, Masonic lodges, and so forth, and became involved after their dispersal in about 1783 when the Bavarian government caught on to them around Europe primarily. They went into the Parisian Outlaws League, which fomented largely the French Revolution. After that, you would find them popping up in Italy with Buonarroti and people like that, and then eventually into what was called the League of the Just, which actually funded Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels to do their Communist Manifesto 1848 and so on. But the Illuminati's purpose, really, you can see it in the French Revolution because they wanted to undermine religion, any sense of authority, not only religious authority, but governmental authority, the monarchs, kings, queens of the day. And man would be come the focal point of attention. You had these various encyclopedists. In the middle 1700s, Rousseau, Diderot, D'Alembert, those types, and the Enlightenment period where science was coming along, and Adam Weishaupt was the one who founded the Illuminati, and he modeled his organization after Jesuits, and Cecil Rhodes, 100 years later, would model his secret society, as he said, after the Jesuits. And they would infiltrate, and even in this country, as you indicated, we got from the Library of Congress this one document from 1802, which, in addition to President Timothy Dwight of Yale talking about this group infiltrating in the U.S., and Joseph Willard, the president of Harvard in 1812, talking about them, this particular document is useful because it's talking about the Colombian Illuminati, DeWitt Clinton, and then, of course, he and Horace Greeley and Clinton Roosevelt later on furthered this into the communist commune at Brook Farm up in Massachusetts, as pretty much like Robert Dale Owens' New Harmony in Indiana. And the idea was to undermine, infiltrate into education, use education to change the consciousness of the people. You would take over publishing houses. You would remove Christians from public office and put, in that day, they called them deists into place. Deists, of course, don't recognize Jesus Christ, for example, as the Son of God. And this way, you would change the society along the model that the Illuminati wanted, along the same lines as the French Revolution. And this continued. It may, you know, be changed a little bit here and there by Karl Marx and so on. But the trend continued. You have in education, at that time, you have members of the Illuminati. Pestalozzi was a member of the Illuminati. Goethe was a member of the Illuminati. They had their code names. These people, in turn, would influence, for example, Pestalozzi influenced a person named Herbart, who influenced G. Stanley Hall, who became John Dewey's mentor. And John Dewey was brought to Johns Hopkins, and that was Daniel Coit Gilman had brought G. Stanley Hall there. Well, what's that got to do with the Illuminati? Well, you'll find out that G. Stanley Hall's mentor, the person who gave him his doctorate over in Leipzig, was a Wilhelm Wundt, whose grandfather was a member of the original Illuminati, the codenamed Raphael. And so, who is John Dewey? He's the father of progressive education, one of the writers of the First Humanist Manifesto. And progressive education has practically taken over the American school system today, and that's why in the 60s you had a shift away from what we used to call the basics, cognitive, reading, writing, math, towards the affective, your feelings, the emotions, and so on, because you have, actually I put quotes in from various people. Benjamin Kidd wrote a book about power and how you would use the emotion to control people much more than the intellect. It was hard to control people and manipulate them on a logical basis, but through the emotion and feelings, you could create this new sense of consciousness, have everything determined based upon a group consensus. And the groups are very important for socialism. John Dewey emphasized the group. He said if you're an independent person, you have a form of, quote, insanity. Your worth is only in terms of what you can give to society. That's the same thing that the Soviets said, the same thing that the Chinese communists said. So there's this pressure moving us towards socialism. John Dewey was head of the League for Industrial Democracy, which had been called formerly Intercollegiate Socialist Society.
And it was really part of the Fabian Socialist Movement, wasn't it?
Right. It was connected with the British Fabians. You had the American, there was actually a journal called the American Fabian. You would have the New School for Social Research. A lot of these things flowed right through, and Dewey was connected with them. He was given awards by the NEA, National Education Association. He said in his book, Individualism, Old and New, I think it's 1928, that we're in for some kind of socialism. He said we may call it something else, liberalism or whatever, but it's going to be socialism. And so these people, the Fabian Socialists, networked with the Rhodes people. Same principles flowing back from the Illuminati through the French Revolution, through Karl Marx, all of these revolutionaries, Mazzini in Italy and so on. In this country, as I said, Robert Dale Owen and his father, Robert Owen, a New Harmony commune, came through the 1800s into the 1900s, but they also networked with another organization, it's not organized, a secret society, Skull and Bones people from Yale, and that's why this is relevant to today, because George W. Bush is a member of Skull and Bones, just like his father and just like his grandfather.
And, of course, there's this continuity of a power passed from generation to generation, and we're supposed to think that we pick our presidential candidate. Now, why do people of great wealth advocate socialism? I mean, here you're talking about the Rhodes people and certainly many of the major commercial interests working with the Fabian socialists. Why would people of great wealth want socialism?
Well, it's easy to control the masses in this way. You had recently on one of your programs, I think Ann Williamson, who was saying how the people from the U.S., Wall Street, and others would actually participate in the restructuring of the Russian economy after the collapse of the Soviet Union, so-called collapse. And basically, it was a power play to get a lot of money. And that's why in my book I put this 1911 cartoon where Karl Marx is seen standing there on Wall Street and the little book's under his arm. And the book doesn't say communism. It says socialism. And he's being greeted by Perkins, Carnegie, Rockefeller, Morgan, all of the usual big money people. And they're saying, delighted to see you. And the reason is there's a difference between capitalism and monopoly capitalism. Capitalism is what most people consider free enterprise that we like. But monopoly capitalism likes socialism because if they can control politicians, and Professor Carol Quigley in Tragedy and Hope, Carol Quigley is Bill Clinton's mentor at Georgetown, talks about this, through financial arrangements, contributions, political contributions, you can control politicians so that they enact laws or bureaucrats draft rules and regulations that stifle your competition. So that way you can control money markets, you can control industries, coal, railroads, whatever, including the press. And that's why I put some quotes in there how J.P. Morgan developed a plan to control the press. He would buy up the press or buy up the parent companies like the New Haven Railroad, which then in turn owned a lot of the publications up in the Northeast. And that way you can control what news people get or what news they don't get, which is just as important.
Absolutely, and that's why, of course, everybody scoffs. All the people in the media scoff at the idea that there might be this power complex out there that really rules the world. And, of course, most socialists think that socialism is going to take from the rich and give to the poor. Actually, it's a means of wiping out the middle class and controlling everyone and people of great wealth. And I'm talking about have you noticed that people like Bill Gates and George Soros said, oh, we don't want to do away with the death tax. Why, that would only help the rich. But you think that they're going to pay any death taxes? Come on now. Their money is all in these various types of foundations. They're not going to pay any death taxes. The taxation, income tax is being used to control the middle class and help them finance this plan for a new world order and a new world religion. Right now, of course, we want to take a quick break here. And let me mention, if you haven't gotten my book entitled The Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. And you can either get it by itself for $12.95, or you can buy it along with a video and a audio tape for $29.95. And the reason that we've reduced the price like that is we want you to get the video and the tape, and we want you to circulate that. We want you to copy it and get it out. And then hopefully more and more people will begin to understand what's going on. I had a call the other day from a woman who had got a Mason to sit down and watch the book. Watch the video on the Brotherhood of Darkness. He got up and said, I'm going back and I'm going to resign from the Masonic Lodge. Now, once people really understand what this is about, good people who are Masons or in many of these other organizations, they will repudiate it. They're, not everybody in the Council on Foreign Relations is a bad person. They're just being manipulated by the wicked people in key positions. But, of course, all of these organizations are used to control thought, just as the media in America is used today to control our thought. And the educational system is used to control our thought. And so if you really want to understand what this is about, let me suggest very strongly you consider getting my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you will certainly want to get Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, Secret Records Revealed and the New World Order. Now is the dawning of the New Age New World Order. Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You need to have this information. You need to study this information. You need to help Dr. Cuddy and this small band of people who pledged their life, their fortune, and their sacred honor to trying to save your freedom. Because if we don't take America back, you're going to lose everything you have very, very soon. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Of course, it's evening back there in North Carolina where he lives. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to give him a call, I don't know anybody who knows more about what's going on today than Dr. Dennis Cuddy. So let me recommend that if you have a question, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, you know, of course, the major forces in the world are our unions, supposedly on one side, and then our capitalists on the other. And suppose people think that our capitalists are all Republicans, that our union people or the common men are all in the Democratic Party. But is that really the way it works, or is it? Do you think that these same people really dominate and control both political parties?
Well, yes, they do, and Professor Quigley, of course, goes into that. He gives two really basic references. At the first, around page 73 of Tragedy and Hope, he talks about the skull and bones people like William Whitney devising a plan where, through a lot of financial contributions to both major political parties, they would control them and alternate power so that the public would think they had a choice when they really don't. And then later on, toward the end of the book, Professor Quigley gives his own take on that, and he says he's looked at the secret records of these powerful people for a couple of years and basically agrees with them. And the word hope in his book really comes from his belief that these people are really noblesse oblige, doing us a great favor by managing our affairs. And he says this is really the way it should be, that in presidential elections, what you had, unfortunately, was a change from the congressional dominance. But what he said we really need is both parties to have basically the same policies so that you could kick the rascals out, but not really change the policies much at all. And that was a wonderful thing in his eyes. And so the alternation of power example today would be something like President George Bush, skull and bones replaced by Bill Clinton, Rhodes Scholar replaced by George W. Bush, skull and bones again. And what you find is that the policy, though, doesn't really change that much. So all three of them were for NAFTA, GATT, World Trade Organization, Most Favored Nation status for China, UN peacekeeping missions, and so on. And so now they'll dress it up a little. They'll use different words instead of the term that you used earlier about fascism. They might say something like the third way because it sounds better. Supposedly the third way is, on the one hand, you have these greedy capitalists getting all the money, and they could care less about the poor, and government doesn't do anything. On the other side, you have the sort of socialistic, communistic idea where you redistribute the wealth and nobody has any incentive to work. And so they say, well, let's don't do either one of those. Let's sort of compromise and synthesize, and we'll call it the third way, where you allow the capitalist engine to run, but then that generates more revenue, which you can use for your social programs. And it sort of sounds better, but as you indicated, it's basically the same sort of people behind it. An example of that would be one of the Rhodes Scholars with Clinton was George Stephanopoulos. And on ABC's This Week, when Cokie Roberts was asking him about Clinton's policy on China, because in 1992, Clinton says, well, I'm against the Chinese human rights violations and, you know, George Bush is out of step and so forth. But then right after the election, Clinton changes. He, you know, gets read the Riot Act by Lloyd Benson and whatever, and he starts saying the same sorts of things. Let's, you know, have an open-door policy with him. And so Stephanopoulos says on the program, there are a lot of reasons the president changed his policy on China, and it had little to do with Chinese contributions. And Cokie Roberts says it had more to do with American money. And Stephanopoulos replies, quote, Council on Foreign Relations, Lehman Brothers, Goldman Sachs, absolutely, end quote. And it shows that there's this powerful group of moneyed people that really controls both parties so that the policy doesn't change, just like Whitney had planned and just like Professor Quigley wants.
I think it's really so interesting as you see what's happening now. They are planning on having a NAFTA that'll extend from Alaska down to Tierra del Fuego, all the way down into Chile. And they are going to have an open borders, open trade policies, beginning to unite our militaries. They're going to encourage a common currency. What you're going to talk about is the United States of the Western Hemisphere. And, of course, with that will come equalizing of income throughout this, not raising the levels of income throughout the rest of the hemisphere to ours, but lowering ours to theirs. And this is really what everything is about. Now, this is exactly the same policy that was carried out by under Bill Clinton. It was the same policy that was carried out under George H. Bush, and the same policies were carried out by Reagan before that and Jimmy Carter before that. And so it really doesn't matter who's in the White House. This move towards internationalism always continues. And then they stage these demonstrations to make you think that, of course, these demonstrators are against the NAFTA and, of course, this combining of the hemisphere. But listen to what these people are saying. They're saying we need laws to protect the environment in these other countries. We need laws to protect workers in these other countries. And what they're really talking about is more control over the lives of the people in other countries. That's what it's really all about. And, of course, who's financing the demonstrators? Why, the very people who are pushing NAFTA and, who are pushing NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization, the very people that they're demonstrating against. Do you think the American people will ever understand that they're being constantly manipulated, that we have a controlled opposition out there? And, of course, Professor Quigley talks about that, how was J.P. Morgan controlled the right and the left, the Democrats, the Republicans, the communists, and the anti-communists?
That's right, and I'm not really sure that they will. Ordinarily, you know, when I was younger and 20, 40 or so years ago, we had a chance. But remember, education has really dumbed down the public, so they're primarily interested in soap operas and, you know, sitcoms, that sort of thing. And it's not by accident. There was this Edward Bernays, who was William Paley's chief advisor in 1928 when he wrote the book Propaganda, said they were an invisible government, and they knew how to manipulate you through the media and various other mechanisms.
That was Paley of CBS?
Right. He founded CBS in 1928. He was a CFR member. He was with the psychological branch during World War II that John J. McCloy had set up. There were various things, the War of the Worlds, Orson Welles. People look at that and say, well, you know, that was just a shocking radio account, but it really wasn't. The Rockefeller Foundation had funded a study of the psychology of panic, and then during the war they developed this, you know, wartime psychology that Tavistock at the end of the war, Second World War, put into use in the civilian population to see how you could be manipulated. Later on, a fellow with them, a senior person named Fred Emery, wrote a book called The Futures We Are In the 1970s, and what he described was what's called the theory of social turbulence, that people with various crises confronting them will go into psychological retreat. And so two things are relevant to what you were just saying about these demonstrators. There's sort of a double function here. Number one is the same sort of scenario that they had in the 60s. In the Strawberry Statement by James Coonan, where he was talking about how some people had infiltrated from the into the SDS, Student for Democratic Society. Number one, it's the same sort of scenario that they had in the 60s. In the Strawberry Statement by James Coonan, where he was talking about how some people had infiltrated from the into the SDS, Student for Democratic Society. And one of the people in a meeting said, a couple of Rockefeller-funded Exxon people had tried to buy up a few radicals to move this movement to the far, far to the left. So as they, the establishment, the corporate, the power elite, moved themselves to the left, they wouldn't look as far left as we, the radicals. So that you know, they would look tame in comparison. And only by doing that could you then, like Rockefeller did, open the door to China and write that New York Times piece that he did in the early 70s, and also another Rockefeller was writing about the second American Revolution, about we need, you know, sexual liberation and things like that. So you had to have these out front hippies, in effect, paving the way for it, so that the public consciousness would become adapted to it, you know, get used to it. But the second thing that happens is a lot of people were turned off by the hippies and the demonstrations in the late 60s. Same thing's supposed to happen today. You're supposed to look at these riotous people and say, oh, you know, we don't want to be associated with them. You know, they're awful, violent people, and they don't get anywhere. You know, the hippies in the 60s, they had a lot of foment and so forth, but basically things pretty much stayed the way they were. They may have taken over the dean's office occasionally, whatever. Same thing here is to develop that sort of defeatist mentality that Fred Emery was talking about. You try, you know, to buck these big, powerful, moneyed people, and you really don't get anywhere, it seems like. You feel frustrated. That's supposed to send you into psychological retreat so that you go off and look at these inane sitcoms all day.
Now, well, I think that that's what an awful lot of people are doing. They have this feeling of hopelessness. Now, for the listeners out there who would like some of the quotations Dr. Cuddy just used, a quotation from, was it the Strawberry Statement, is in the book, Secret Records Revealed. You need to have the information. It's all here. And, of course, Dr. Cuddy has actually consolidated years and years of research into these books, which will help you, the listener, have these things right at your fingertips, and you can begin to see how we are all being manipulated, we are all being controlled. But, of course, the great tragedy is the wealth of America is being utilized to force all other countries into this new world order. Dr. Cuddy referred to the article that David Rockefeller had written in the New York Times. That was in August of 1973, when David Rockefeller had come back from China that already killed somewhere between 40 and 80 million people, consolidating power, and David Rockefeller wrote, the social experiment in China under Chairman Mao is among the most successful and important in history. The social experiment in China under Chairman Mao is among the most important and significant in history. That is the human compassion that these people have for suffering, for genocide. Why don't we ever talk about the horror of the Holocaust in China? Well, of course, that was simply a social experiment, financed in large part by American corporations, and being continuing to be financed today as Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers and the World Bank, which we finance, and the International Monetary Fund, which we finance, and the Aid for International Development, which we finance, and the great American corporations, which we guarantee their investments, are pouring money into China to strengthen the government there that is oppressing the people. Well, Dennis, we've just got about 1 minute before we go to a break. What do you think the most important message is we could leave with the people today?
That you don't give up hope, because that's what they want you to do, but you need to recognize that you're up against the network. First of all, you need to pray, because nothing's going to happen without God's help. And secondly, you need to become involved. Don't get turned off. Don't develop a defeatist state of mind. But you need to work with other people, even if it's just writing letters to the editor, being informed by talk shows like Radio Liberty, and communicate with each other so that at a grassroots level you build up support gradually. Because the one thing these people really hate is publicity about what they're doing and communication of what they're doing.
And I'm sure they hate programs such as Radio Liberty. We're going to have to take our last break for the hour. And this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon you out across America to help us get the truth out by what we're doing on shortwave, on the Internet, on major radio stations. And if you believe in what we're doing, if you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family and join in our effort to educate the American people, we hope many of you will decide right now you want to join the Radio Liberty family. And you do that by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our 4 best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But that you will be actually helping us do what we do. And then, of course, we ask you to tell other people about our radio programs. And we ask you to tell them about our Internet site, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, www.RadioLiberty.com. You can hear our programs there 4 hours a day. You can, of course, pull down our newsletters. You can get a number of the other things that we put up there that are important. But our major thrust is education, to teach you how to argue, to discuss, to defend your position. Why America is a Christian nation. Can you defend that proposition, that this was found by Christians based upon a Christian worldview? Doesn't mean that everybody has to be a Christian, but it means that if you destroy Christianity, you destroy the very foundation of this country. And that is why the great tax-exempt foundations, the great universities, the great corporations, and the Supreme Court are doing everything they can to undermine the Christian fabric of this society. Because, of course, once you destroy Christianity, it's not that people will believe in nothing. They'll believe in anything, and they'll believe in the new spirituality, which is being encouraged by Ted Turner and Maurice Strong and the Rockefeller Foundation and all of these people who are so closely aligned with the occult today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. I guess this afternoon, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, the books he has written, Secret Records Revealed, Now is the Dawning of the New Age, New World Order, his book on Fabian Socialism, his book on the NEA, the National Educational Association, all of those are available by calling our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, WAR. So if you'd like to get the books, I can recommend it to you very strongly. Now, if you are out there in the listening audience, you have a question. Maybe you disagree with this. Maybe you honestly believe socialism is the wave of the future. Well, if you do, I've got news for you. You're being manipulated, and you're a victim of this whole incredible scam that has been used for so many years to harness and enslave the American people. Give us a call at 1-800-544. Pardon me, give us a call here at the studio at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, you agree, you disagree, because Dr. Cuddy is certainly well up on so much of what's going on today. Again, those numbers, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have not gotten previous copies of our newsletter and you'd like a sample copy, let me suggest the April newsletter, and Dr. Cuddy has written a great deal of that. And we go into this Clintonian faction of the Illuminati, Timothy Dwight's letter, pardon me, Timothy Dwight's lecture. It was a sermon that was given by the president of Yale University on July 4th, 1798, wasn't it?
Yes.
And, of course, all these people understood the Illuminati. They knew it was here in the United States. And it's amazing how they have simply destroyed the reality of the American people, suppressed this information, taken it out of the textbooks. Well, we've got somebody calling from King City. Is this Reyes calling from King City?
Yes, it is.
How are you today?
Great. And yourself, Dr. Stan?
Doing just fine. In fact, they're going to be down there on the 1st of May talking to, a Republican women's group.
Oh, great. I really love your show, Dr. Stan, and so informative, and I wish that everybody could listen to your show. I've mentioned your show to just about everybody I talk to, and the reason is so that everybody can be informed as to what is really going on out there.
Bless you for that. Thank you so much for just because that's we've got to get this word out by word of mouth.
And that's about the only way it's going to happen, I guess.
Right.
Because even people that you mentioned it, that I mentioned it to, they're no way. They even say no way. That's not true. And so I say, well, listen to 88 AM, and so I just wanted to call to let you know.
God bless you. Thank you so much. Just don't get discouraged. If people repudiate you, just tell them, well, wait till the energy crisis gets a lot worse and you're not able to afford your utility bill. Maybe you'll come back and want to find out why it happened. And believe me, that's going to happen.
That's what I wanted to call about, Dr. Stan, is about the energy crisis. What is really going on out there? I didn't hear any of your past programs.
Well, I'll tell you what. You call our 800 number and ask for our last newsletter. That's the March newsletter. And that summarizes it pretty well. It's a scam. And, of course, it involves the utility companies. It involves the great corporations. It involves our politicians, both at the state and the national level. And they want to run up the price of electricity so that they can force us to lower our living standards and begin to equalize life here and in Central and South America. That's what it's really all about. And it ties into get our March newsletter, and we give you the references and the books you can actually get where you can actually find what it's all about. Same thing with mad cow disease. Why are they talking about something we don't even have here? Because they want us to quit eating beef. And you say, that's crazy talk. Well, all you need to do is get their material, and you can get it either from them or for us. It's contained in our Sustainable Development Syllabus. But if they want to go out and buy the Global Biodiversity Assessment for $65, they can order that from their local bookstore, published by Cambridge University Press, and it's all there, the plan for their future.
You know, Dr. Stan, I'm going to stay on the line if that's okay with you so I can get that information.
All right, fine. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll put you on hold, and we'll have a genie get your name and address, and we'll send you the March newsletter, okay?
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Let's go to Chris, who's calling from Kentucky. And if Chris, how you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I really appreciate you getting this information out. I am going to get more information out here after hearing this tonight because our thoughts are being controlled.
In fact, just get a copy of this tape and duplicate it, get it in anybody's hand who will listen to it, okay?
Okay, great. And okay. I just want to say that this is the only talk radio that's more informative than not even Rush Limbaugh would talk about.
Well, Rush Limbaugh would not be on 600 and some stations if he was telling what we were talking about. Hey, thanks so very much for calling, Chris. Anything else?
I just wanted to give you the great compliment and keep up the good work, and I'm going to be telling more and more people, and you do have some listeners, but I hope they call in soon.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
And we've got Frizz calling. Is that Fritz or calling from New York?
Yes.
Are you a first-time caller?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, it's good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. I agree pretty much with what you're saying, and I just have a few questions.
Okay, fine.
And it seems to me that the financial and media power is centered in New York City. And they're pretty much calling the shots. For example, you have ABC, CBS, NBC, Time Warner. You have the entire American media here.
All right. And I think Dr. Cuddy, Fritz says that he thinks that this thing is pretty well centered in New York City. They've even got the Council on Foreign Relations there at 5080 68th Street.
Right. There's an increasing consolidation, joint mergers, interlocking directors have been around for a long time so that the control of communications is in fewer and fewer hands. And that's basically what J.P. Morgan prior to television had mapped out. They They originally had an idea of getting 200 and some newspapers, but they figured if you could control about the 25 leading ones that you would have it pretty well controlled. But he also had to have the Associated Press, so I include some quotations from documents indicating how they were going to do that. Also include quotations internationally how Havas in France, Wolf News Agency in Germany, and in Germany and Reuters internationally had to be controlled as well. I include quotes about the New York Times, since your caller mentioned New York. Herman Dinsmore was the international editor for about 10 years and said basically that's what they do. They slanted things toward the communists. That's his term. I try and put their own words. And that also the London Times, because the Rhodes faction was controlling the London Times, there was a book said that they would have a meeting at All Souls College there and decide, and like I said before, what you did not hear. It's not just what they do print to propagandize you. It's what they keep from you that's also important.
I see. Well, that leads me to, I guess I have two questions.
Okay, go ahead.
The first question is, what is the role of South Africa in terms of finance, and I guess the whole game plan is to bring the world under this system, which is controlled from New York.
All right. What part does South Africa play, Dr. Cuddy?
Connected to what was called Rhodesia, very close there. There's a whole a lot of information in somewhat in Tragedy and Hope, but also in the Anglo-American Establishment by Carol Quigley about the Jameson Raid and so forth, because that was a very key place to get the De Beers organization, the consolidated mining effort there for both diamonds and gold. And it was extremely important. Alfred Beit, B-E-I-T, was an extremely important person there. Bringing it up to today, of course, it was very important for Nelson Mandela and these individuals to be in control there to move it toward, well, actually Mandela says he's friends with the communists there. And you need this sort of communist balance that you can then synthesize with the West into this world socialist government, which is the model that H.G. Wells had used in his books called The New World Order and The Open Conspiracy Blueprints for World Revolution. So any place like South Africa with tremendous natural resources and wealth where you can centralize power is important, not only for that reason, but also you have major conferences on world religion, which occurred there, I believe, last year it was, because they don't want just a world government, world economy. You can't leave anything out. You have to have a world religion as well.
And I think, of course, one of the important things is, Fritz, that the diamond mines and the gold holdings of Cecil Rhodes have been used to finance this whole thing. Now, it's much larger than that at the present time,
yes.
And it controls, ties into the central bank of the world. But
diamond
cartel has always been used to finance these things.
Yes,
cartels are against the law, so why does this cartel get by? Because it is a front for this whole Rhodes movement.
Right. That explains it precisely, because I do know that apparently the person who introduced JFK to politics was a South African diamond merchant by the name of Templesman.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes perfect sense.
And
well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much for calling. Well, Dennis, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you so very much for being with us. God bless you, and we'll be talking in the near future.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. Well, I hope you enjoyed this program, because you heard one of the real experts on this. I always learn from Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and he's a personal friend. We work very closely together. And as I say, he wrote a great deal of our latest newsletter. Now, that is the April newsletter. And if you'd like to get a copy of our April newsletter, you give us a call at 1-800-544-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we'll be glad to send you a copy of the newsletter. Of course, we don't want you calling in every month. We hope you're going to subscribe to this and help us get the truth out. But once you get the newsletter, we encourage you to copy it and distribute it. And as the gentleman from King City was saying, he's telling others about our program. A lot of people scoff at it. Well, get the information. Get the secret records revealed if you want the original pages from the book that Woodrow Wilson wrote in 1913, talking about the group that rules the world, or copy the letter that FDR wrote to Colonel House that I found in Colonel House's papers at Yale, where he, Roosevelt says, as you and I know, Colonel, a small financial group has controlled our government going back to the time of Andrew Jackson. We have this documentation. We'll get it for you, and then you've got to help us get the information out. Well, pray for America, and certainly pray for revival in America. Pray that our ministers may be willing to take a position of leadership in this truly spiritual battle. And please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.